Now, this is a recording with Kathleen Merritt, recorded on Monday the 28th of September 1992. Kathleen is the keeper of the brasses, or has been for many, many years.
Yes.
Kathleen, first of all, just a tiny bit about yourself. Now, you've been a resident of Albury and coming to this church since...
Yes, I came in 1929, when I was quite a young girl.
But you weren't actually born in Albury?
Oh, no, Somerset.
Ah, I hadn't detected that.
Hadn't you? It's the one that most people do.
And what are your very earliest memories of this church?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I suppose... Really, I started coming to church, and then I was confirmed shortly after I came here, because I hadn't been able to be confirmed before. But I suppose mostly on a Sunday evening, it was very full, always family, you know, sort of father, mother and children. I think the children used to come to Sunday school quite regularly. Fathers mostly were busy in their gardens and that sort of thing, you know. But Sunday evening, then mother came along and the whole family would be there. Also quite a lot of young men, because us girls used to sit one side and the young men used to sit the other. And then we invariably met up outside and went for walks, because there was nothing else to sort of do in the country, you see. No radio, television in those days. But
sounds rather romantic.
Oh, it does. Well, it was in a way, you know. All very simple and innocent, it was in those days. A favourite walk was to Newlands Corner. But the church was the real heart of a village in those days. Because, you know, it's a sort of church. And, of course, the school connected the church school, which meant that the children always came regularly. And on Ascension Day, they always met here in the morning and were here to the service and then walked up to the school afterwards. But, it was a very friendly sort of feeling then. Everyone knew everyone else, you know, in a village, because you either, very few people had cars, of course, and you sort of met them walking along the lane, or you met them on the bus and you got to know people. But of course, nowadays, you can live near someone and you don't get to know them at all.
Mm. So you were what sort of age when you first started
19.
Coming?
19
mm. years old. And then how did your life and the church progress, as it were?
Well, I was working, but came to work for Mr. and Mrs. Coe, who had the farm in the village. And he was a member of the Apostolic Church. He was the organist there. But he also took quite a big interest in the parish church as well. And he was the founder and conductor of the Albury Choral Society, which working for them and being sort of coming to church and that. And I liked singing and he belonged to the Choral Society. But he also, we nearly always sort of sang the Crucifixion at Easter time. And although they were apostolic people, they did quite a bit for the parish church. And we often he would give concerts and that sort of thing, have concerts. And that's how I got to know a lot of the people then.
And then have you had your own sort of family ceremonies in connection with the church, you know, sort of marriages?
The first, I suppose, was my niece, my brother. It was through my brother that I really came up this way. He was working at the Drummond Arms. And he married here, and his children were christened here.
So you were involved in all that?
Oh, involved, yes. Involved with a godmother to my nieces and nephews, and bridesmaid, of course, to my brother. But she sadly died at the beginning of the war, and we all moved away. But then I got married later on, and my son and my daughter were both in the choir, and I was asking my daughter this morning, and she said, oh yes, I remember being in the choir, and we used to go to the cathedral, because we had a very good organist then from about, that was much later of course, that was in about 1947, and he was another very good musician, and he, whatever musical knowledge I had, it got through Mr. Coe and Mr. Rowland.
Mm-hmm. And subsequently, you went on, you got married,
yes.
You had the children, mm-hmm. but you sang in the choir yourself.
Oh, yes, time. Yes.
What recollections do you have of that?
Oh, very happy, really. I went in when my son, I wasn't in the choir, I was in the choral society, that was up to the war years. When my son was 7, the schoolmaster told me that he had a very good voice. He thought he should go in the choir. And so to encourage him, I joined as well. Because by then, the choir was diminishing. Before the war, there were lots of men and boys, as you can see by the photograph in the vestry, you know. No women or no girls. But by the time the war was over, the choir, there were a few boys, but there were no young men, apart from the schoolmasters were always in the choir. As I say, I went in the choir, and then I stayed in it until my daughter was coming, and then I came out, went back in it again when she was old enough. Always thoroughly enjoyed it.
Now, you have memories, presumably, all these years, of people in connection with the church. One of the memories I must get is your recollection of Queen Mary visiting the village.
Well, not much of a memory, really. I think my son was about... He was quite small. I doubt whether he'd started school. I think he may have been about 4 or 5, something like that. And someone said one Sunday, Queen Mary's coming this afternoon to the church, you see. And I said, oh, yes, she's coming to see the tapestry, that one at the end, you see. So I said, oh, come on, Tim. So we went and we sat on the memorial down there. And we saw this grand car come along and sweep up. And so we waited till she came down again. And I think she must have either been visiting Helen, Duchess of Northumberland, or was going there afterwards. She wasn't here terribly long. But she waved graciously as we were sitting on the memorial. That was all we ever saw of her.
And what was your recollection of her? She was by then quite an old lady.
Oh,
she?
Yes, but very much. You wouldn't have mistaken her for anyone else. You know, always very upright. Mm. Whenever you saw her, I saw her because a few years towards the end of the 30s, I was working in London. And, of course, was always out when there was anything special going on. But Queen Mary was always very upright. She never seemed to relax, you know, always very upright. And she was sat in the back of the car, you see, waving very regally. I don't think my son was very impressed.
But a pretty thrilling moment for you.
That's right, just to say, many years ago, way back when I went to London first, after I was 14, I saw Queen Alexandra. She was a very dainty little soul. She was a very old lady. I think she died shortly afterwards, you know.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Now, as I said, you've been the keeper of the brasses for many, many years. How did that come about? How were you first asked to look after them?
Well, for many years I did the washing. Washed the altar cloths and the side cloths. Used to wash the rector when Mr. Owen was here. I did his albs and surplices. I did the choir girls and boys' surplices, and the his albs and these, and then there was a young woman who used to come in and clean the church, and one sometimes sitting there, I would think, oh gosh, the brass doesn't look very nice. And I said to the rector, who does the brass now? And so he said, well, I'm afraid Sylvie does the cleaning, but she doesn't like cleaning brass. So I said, well, I hate to see it looking like that. I don't mind cleaning it. So he said, oh, would you, Mrs. Mary? And I said, well, yes. So since then, I've done it, you see.
And that was roughly when? I mean, how many
years?
Oh,
goodness. 11, 12 years ago, something like that, you know. But...
Well, we've actually got one of the brasses down off the altar, a magnificent, an enormously heavy
yes.
candlestick.
Yes.
Which you've had to lift up and down.
That's
all these
right,
years.
Yes.
Can you show me, you know, how you go about
yes,
cleaning these wonderful things?
Certainly. I used to lift them out, but they got so heavy, I just lift them down now and put them on the altar step.
How much do you know about this?
Nothing, I'm afraid, beyond there isn't. There is an inscription somewhere, isn't there, on there? Or is it on... No, it's on the cross, I think.
There certainly is an inscription around the edge of it.
There's something there, isn't there?
The gift of John... Oh, gosh, I can't...
I haven't got my glasses.
Yes, yes, there is an inscription, dated 1868. I wonder what it does say, the gift of John...
1868.
Paris, would it be? John Paris, Esquire, to the Church of St. Peter and Paul, Albury.
Albury, yes. Would have been this church then, wouldn't it?
Yes.
It wouldn't have been the old church, because this one
consecrated.
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 1864, was it 1862? No, yes. 1840 something, I think. So obviously that was given to this church, not the old parish church.
That's right. Yes, it says something, something AD 1868.
Yeah. Well, the cross.
That's beautiful.
I think that's got something on it as well. So mm-hmm. perhaps that was the same time.
Same gift. Mm. Yes. Now, take me through what you would have done with
well,
this.
Well, I usually take... Oh, goodness.
Can I open it? I'll open it for you. I'll just put the microphone down.
My wrist is not
perfect. Right.
So you usually get these down one at a time and take the candles out.
Yes. Now, we're just cleaning these on a piece of newspaper. This will be fascinating for people in 50 years' time who are
yes,
trying to find out how to
clean them.
They
probably have some marvellous stuff that doesn't need any cleaning.
I suppose you've built quite an affection for these.
Well, yes, you know, I like to see them, and very often when I look up, I think, oh, gosh, don't they look nice?
Hmm.
The same as when I used to do the rector's albs and surplices, and it was soon after... sort of all the nice new soap powders and that came in. Very often when he would come up, I would think, gosh, doesn't he look nice and white? He used to look beautifully white, you know.
Now, this is really very tricky, isn't it? There's a lot. It's heavily
yes.
ornamental.
Oh, yes.
What are these stones set in here?
I don't know. In some of the silver, the communion plate, that's had a lot of these stones in, but some of them have come out. But I imagine they're still around somewhere. I haven't, if I knocked them out, you know, I would have asked for them to be put back in, if possible. But
now, by keeping them done, was it once a week? Was
once
it?
A week,
once
yes.
a week.
It takes me about an hour.
Yeah.
Once a month, I do the communion plate as well. And that, of course, takes me, so it's usually about an hour and a half or 2 hours. And as I say, since we've had the new heating in the church, that tarnishes it terribly. I find it's much harder to clean.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why that should be.
I suppose it's the gas, is it?
Yes, it would put moisture into
yes,
the air.
Yes, I suppose
it?
So, mm. yes.
Mm. Right.
But I find with this padding, it's easier to do because you don't get the sort of, you know,
the sort of white, the brass
white
I used to leave a white.
Yes, mm. even so, mm. I bring a little brush up with me, yes. which is not a very good one, but this is the one I bring up.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring all these.
That's right. Now, these, in fact, you cleaned for the last time just the other day, I believe.
I beg your pardon?
You cleaned these for the last time. Just
yeah,
the
last
day.
Week, yes. I finally gave up, and no one offered for a few weeks. And the rector said to me one day, do you think, have you heard of anyone? I said, no, I very much doubt, because I don't think any of the younger generation will want to do it. And the other old people in my age, and they don't want it either. But anyhow, I think this gentleman from Farley Green, who does the cleaning at the Farley Green, little church at the Barn Church, you know, at Farley mm-hmm. Green, and he's offered to come and do it. So hopefully this will be my last time.
I'll let you just polish there for a moment while I just check. Yes, it's still all right for tape.
And the flower vases on a Friday, I usually, because you can't clean them when the flowers are in them, you know. Mm. So the flower ladies usually come on a Saturday to do the flowers. Mm-hmm. So I take the flower vases out and take them in the vestry. And if any of the flowers are nice enough to be sort of used again with some fresh ones, I leave those and then throw out all the old ones.
Mm-hmm. So, in fact, just looking around the church from where we are, we're just cleaning these up by the altar steps.
Yes.
That's one large candle holder. Now, you've got a good many others, haven't you? You've got the vases, which are up there.
Yes.
The cross itself.
The cross itself. And then processional cross.
Processional cross, yes.
And the church warden staffs. And the there's a brass jug by the font. But that doesn't get too bad. I just do that now and again, you know.
And there it
but
comes.
It's these brass things that do take their time.
Now, that's coming up beautifully. Have you ever been complimented on the shine coming off these?
Well, usually some of the people, you know, when they're doing their flowers, then they always say, "Oh, Mrs. Mayor, doesn't the brass look lovely?"
Yes,
not that I like cleaning brass, mind you, I hate it. Absolutely hate it. I think I've had to do so much in my time.
Well, that surely must be something in service and sacrifice, which is, after all, what is required of us.
Well, that's right,
that you do something with love.
Yes, well, that's what I said at the time, you know, when I said about the brass, and Mr. Gorham said, "Oh, I'm afraid she doesn't like cleaning brass when she does the cleaning." And so I said, "Oh, well, in that case, I'll do it," which I've done it ever since. But I was thinking this morning, thinking about this, when I came to Albury first, the old boy who was a verger, and I mean, then we used to, there were always services in the middle of the week. I mean, he not only had to do his regular duties as verger, he did all the cleaning of the church, he cleaned the brass, he also kept the churchyard tidy. So, I mean, he had to do an awful lot for his duties, and he was a marvellous old boy.
Yes. Right, well, there we are, finished, and ready for another week.
Yes, well, I hope someone will do it nicely. I hope they'll enjoy doing it. They said that the brass at St. Michael's looks very nice, so hopefully ours will as well.
Well, I'll lift that back onto the altar.
That's right, thank you very much.
Just tell me one or two other little things. In your times here at the church, are you reasonably comfy there?
Yes, I'm all right.
I think probably being on our knees is as good a place to be.
That's right, yes.
What recollections do you have of rectors and vicars here down the years? I mean, were there wonderful fiery speakers? And
Yes, well, the one who was here when I came, Mr. Gray, he hadn't been here very long. And I found it happened later on when we had to change. When I came, everyone used to say, "Not like it was in Canon Skeen's time." Canon Skeen was the previous man, you say. And so poor Mr. Gray, for a long time, you know, Canon Skeen never used to do this. But the same thing happened when Mr. Orme came after, I think Canon Parker was here before Mr. Orme. And people were still saying, "Of course, it's not the same as in Canon Parker's time." So obviously, whichever newcomer comes along, there's some criticism of, you know, what he does, what the other man didn't or did do. But as I say, Mr. Gray, he was very nice. He was the man who confirmed me. Let me see who came next.
You didn't get married here in this church, did you?
Yes, I got married here, yes.
Was that Mr. Gray as well?
No, that was Mr. Singh, although I think it was Canon Rosevere. You know, it's terrible.
Mr.
I ought to remember,
didn't
I?
Mr. Singh certainly is one that somebody that's been
Canon
mentioned.
Canon Rosevere, yes. He was the assistant priest here, and he lived. Yes, he married me. And Mr. Coe, who I'd originally came to work for years ago, he played the organ for me. And then after that, we had, as I say, Reverend Singh was here. A lot of people thought he was very good, but I always felt that he had too much of a missionary spirit. He had been a missionary out in India, and I always sort of felt that he rather thought that we were lacking. We should have had more zeal, you know, and we should have done more. The natives out there had responded so much more, but a lot of people liked him very much. So perhaps I was a little bit biased in that way, I don't know.
Yes, you felt you were being taken over a little bit.
That's right, yes. I always felt we were very lacking, you know. We ought to have been much more sort of enthusiastic about everything. Then we had Mr. Orme, Mr. Reverend Stuart Orme. He was here for 28 years. He was very, very nice. I went to work for them when they came to the rectory, and I worked for them all the years they were there, saw their two girls grow up. And they were terribly kind to me. And when my son died suddenly, they were very, very sweet to me. They couldn't have been kinder. And as I say, Mr. Owen was ill, and then for 2 years we were without anyone. And if it hadn't been for Mr. Sherman sort of rallying us round, I think a lot of us would have sort of drifted away. Not, and once you go away, I don't think you sort of come back again so much, do you?
To the church.
To the church. Yeah. But we had a very nice man come out. He just come out from Guildford. And sadly, I saw in the church news the other day that he died recently. But he was an extremely nice, friendly man. And then we had one or two odd ones come in to patch up till such time as the Reverend Dudley Gummer came, you see. Mm-hmm.
And, you were telling me a little bit earlier on about washing the surplices and the cassocks.
Oh, yes.
And all the rest of it.
Well, I did that when for Mr. Orme once. I said to him, your surplice looks rather grey. So he said, oh, does it, Mrs. Laird? I said, yes. So he said, well, his wife does it. He said, it did it in the machine. He said, why, should it look better? I said, well, I'm sure it ought to look whiter than that. So he said, well, would you wash them? And I said, well, yes, certainly. So I took on, I said, I do the autoclaves, you see, in this side one. And as I say, when my children were in the choir, I always did their little surplices and also any others that I saw that were looking rather sort of grubby, I think, or take those home and wash them. And so he said, oh, all right. So I used to do his surplice and his big alb. This is the very large one they wear for communion. But it's a frightful thing to iron because it's like a small tent. But I used to soak them and wash them and boil them, and they used to look beautifully white. Right? I used to feel quite proud when I saw him walking in and looking so sort of blue white, new dads and all that sort of thing, you know. Absolutely lovely. As I say, I kept it until again I had to give up washing. I found it was getting a bit too much. And I think Mrs. Sherman does it now.
And was it new dyes, or was it a little bit of love from heaven, as it were, that got them that white?
I don't know. A little bit of both, perhaps. I know the children's surplices, they always were frightfully grubby around the neck, you know. I used to soak those, and I kept a big old saucepan that I used to boil them up. And, of course, starch, which made a lot of difference. A lot of the people who washed the few that did wash their children's surplices never used to starch them, which I always starch them well because it made them nice and stiff, you know, and they look the same as the autoclaves. I always starch those, and of course they kept cleaner much longer then. But as I say, I always felt very proud when they came nice and white, whiter than white.
Oh, well, man looketh on the outward appearance.
That's absolutely, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful, Kathleen. Just, my knees are absolutely killing me. Are you all
oh,
right?
Yes, well, we can get up.
We don't
need to remain kneeling like this, do we?
But let's just perch once more on the step.
I'll leave you to put that away.
I'll pop that back up for you, yes.
Back again, that's right.
Oh, gosh, that's better.
Yes, I find my knees now on a Sunday, on a Friday here. I never kneel down, I'm afraid, now, because I get down, I can't get up again. What it is to get old.
Oh, yes. What other little things come sort of sparkling down the years in your memories about this church and about your visits to it? I mean, you've told me some wonderful stories.
Well, I haven't. Nothing but very exciting, I don't think.
If somebody said, you know, can you think of one particular little incident which sums up Albury Church to you and what it's meant to you, which is a lot, obviously, I can see.
Yes, well, I often think sitting there on a Sunday morning, and it's lovely and light and bright, you know, and as the sun is shining, and I often think, my gosh, the people from the old village up in the park, when they had to clear away from the park and move down here to Weston Street, and this church was built for them. I thought, I bet a lot of the old people sat there and thought, don't like this, this is too modern and brash, you know, because it's so lovely and light, and the little church, and I expect you've been there, have you, to
yes,
the little
I have.
Church in the park. I mean, it's well, like all little village churches, rather old and dark and with pillars, whereas this must have seemed very terribly modern, away in 1842, 1846, something like that. But as I say, when I came first, of course, the organ was in the gallery up around the corner there over the priest's vestry. That was the original place for the organ. Here, mm-hmm. You see where there's
just
a pillar missing.
Side of the chancel, yeah.
Yes, that's where the original organ. Then they put that one in the gallery. And of course, when I came, when we used to come to church, before this organ and those pipes were put up there, quite a few people would be up there for the service, especially sort of like now, harvest time or Christmas, that's when there were more people here. But the church was nearly always pretty full, you know. This pews were all, and as I say, harvest time, you, or the feast days, you would get people, extra ones, sitting up there. Well, then, of course, in 1936, isn't it? That's right, the Miss Capitose gave this organ for the to commemorate the Silver Jubilee of King George and Queen Mary. And that was, of course, when the pipes were put up there, which is rather a shame because there's some lovely windows behind
there.
We
windows,
can't
yes.
see them, you see.
Well, Bob Caspard has taken photographs of those.
Oh, has
the,
he? Oh, that would be rather nice, yes.
So you'll be able to see those,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the organist we had then, he was very good. He was here, oh, must be about 26, 27 years. Mr. Rowland, I did give his name to Mrs. Caspard. I don't know whether she's got in touch with him.
I think she made a note of his name, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem is how many people to collect. You
that's
know?
Right, yes, you've only
memories.
Got so long, that's
yes,
right. That's but right. He was devoted to the church. The church and his music here came first with everything. And he really, as I say, several of us, the only musical knowledge we have is what we gained through him. He was extremely patient, and he would always explain everything to you. He'd explain all the notes, and usually he could tell you some funny little anecdote about whichever composer it was, you know, Hartsdyke or something about Haydn or something about Mendelssohn or something like that. He always had some little thing, and we were very good because several times we went into the cathedral and did an evensong when the cathedral choir were away on holiday.
Mm, so and that was a standard, wasn't it?
It was quite a sort of an achievement. And he was always very good at arranging choir outings. Oh, beautiful choir outings. But wherever we went, he always made a point that in the afternoon we went somewhere for the evensong. We went to Salisbury Cathedral, Winchester Cathedral, Chichester Cathedral, Canterbury Cathedral. We went in the King's College Chapel at Cambridge. We didn't take part, but we were allowed to go in there and sit in the pews. Ely Cathedral we went to. And he always made a point that we had to go to evensong at the end of the day. But he used to arrange the most marvellous choir outings. We would start sometimes about 8 o'clock in the morning. And he used to go over it beforehand and time it all, so we knew exactly we would arrive at such and such a time. We should be there 1 hour or three quarters or something. Then we must leave for so and so. But they were all, as I say, we always enjoyed, you know, going in the various cathedrals and feeling that although we weren't the choir as such, we were allowed to go and sit in the choir stalls, and we sort of took part as such as we could in the evensong, which were usually fairly simple, you know, in the afternoons. But we went in St. Paul's Cathedral and a very old place, Dorchester, not the Dorchester in Dorset, but another Dorchester way in, up in Berkshire, not Berkshire, farther on than that.
Yes,
very
there is
ancient.
Yes, there's a Dorchester in Oxfordshire, isn't there?
That's where it was, because I think it was when we went to Blenheim, we went there. That was very ancient old place. Of course, I don't know whether they have any services there or not. I shouldn't think so. But it was very interesting because I didn't realize there was another Dorchester up there.
Mm. What a wonderful man, and what an inspiring teacher.
Oh, he was. Mm. He was, absolutely, you know, and he was very good with the... This cross always reminds me of him because if you're not very careful, it gets twisted round. And always, before he went over to the organ, he would always make sure, because where the choir boys and that had been in and out, put their hand on it, it always skew whiff, you see. It still sometimes gets twisted because I've said to Mr. Sherman, the cross is crooked. And he said one day, "Does it worry you, Mrs. Merritt?" I said, "Yes, it does." So I stick a little bit of paper in the back, you see, to
that.
Hold it firm so that it can't twist, because it worries me when I come in and see it sort of like that, you know. But Mr. Rowland was always very good. As he went to the organ, he always looked up and saw that that was right.
Straighten the cross.
And he would always, now and again, he would say, "You're getting very slack in the choir with your verticals and responses." And so we would have to go over the verticals and responses lots of times till we brought it up. And the same as Christmas time, when we had the nine lessons service and nine lessons and carols, one or the other of the choir would have to read one of the lessons, and always beforehand, "Come down and read it," he would say, you see, and you would start off, "I'm going to the back of the church." And he used to go to the back of the church. "You want to speak up, Mrs. Merritt," he said, or sometimes he would say, "You're taking it much too fast," because I used to get nervous, you know, rattle through it. So I wish you'd try and think, I mustn't hurry, you know. But he was most particular, most careful, you know, that you, and as I say, was very strict with it. He could be very amusing and keep you laughing, but he was also very strict. He didn't put up with any nonsense with the choir, which sadly, I must say that once or twice when we did have a little choir, I used to be appalled to see the behavior, you know.
Well, yes, having been a naughty choir boy
That's
myself.
That's right, yes. But he really was very, very good. He was devoted, because he used to come over and play for Evensong. And he worked in London, and in his lunch hour, he nearly always seemed to be spending the lunch hour in the Westminster Music Library looking at something. And now when I listen to music on the television or anything on a Sunday, I think, "I know that anthem, you know," and I sing away.
That's lovely. Well, that's a wonderful memory. Thank you very much
indeed.
But
that's all right.
Oh, that's lovely, yes.